Well, the complete overhaul of the Mets as we know it continues with Jeff Passan reporting that Pete Alonso has signed and agreed to a five-year, $155 million contract with the Baltimore Orioles. As Todd Zeal and I spoke about earlier today, over the last 24 hours or so, maybe over the last 12 even, started to get the sense that it was going in this direction. Once Baltimore missed out on Kyle Schwarber, it seemed like they would pivot to Alonso, and 5 years didn't seem like a deal or a term that the Mets would end up going to and matching. So that is indeed what ended up happening. But from a Mets fan's perspective, it's another huge blow as another fan favorite, all-time great Met is out the door, joining Brandon Nimmo. Edwin Diaz is now Pete Alonso. I've said this in the past, and I still believe it, that David Stearns is smart, has a plan, and we will ultimately see what that plan becomes. But there is no doubt that he is putting extra pressure on himself right now to get it right and to get it right quickly with the departures of some big-time fan favorites. With the way things are going right now, it's hard to even envision what will happen next. Big moves expected to continue as the Mets reshape a roster after one of the most disappointing seasons in Mets history. We'll have much more throughout the day as news continues to break here on SNY.
I think what's coming next, we don't know specifically what those things are. They're not going to do something rash to react to this. But what's coming next over the next weeks and months, probably a lot of really interesting, exciting things that's going to reset the roster. And now Stearns has the chance, obviously, to really make this a very different team. But there's so much money out there to spend now with these players gone. And there's so much ambition that the Mets have to win that, again, I think that today's probably the hardest day in this transition into a new kind of Mets.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Wednesday, December the 10th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, and come and enjoy the latest at the new and improved TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Join the chat for free, premium content for less than a cup of coffee a month, updates on the show, interactions with me, all at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks at the Believe Network for supporting this show. Well, what did Yogi Berra say? It's deja vu all over again. I feel like we just had this show 24 hours ago, and I didn't even have a chance to really rest and process and really recover from the wild Edwin Diaz saga of Tuesday. And then, oh, I guess about 1 o'clock today, early afternoon, the news came down about, and I don't think it's, the Diaz news was surprising, but not necessarily this news, the news that the Orioles had signed Pete Alonso to a five-year $155 million contract. Pete gets the AAV that he wants. I guess he gets the appreciation from a team that he wants. And the cycle is complete as both of the big free agents that the Mets had seemed to outline as priorities this offseason, and I here at the Talking Mets podcast felt was the foundation of building out the team, are now gone, moved on to potentially greener pastures. And we're left here to figure it out and discuss and pick up the pieces. Now, I'm not here to do a couple of different things. I'm not here to tell you it's going to be okay and defend this move and tell you, oh, this is Stearns. He knows what he's doing, because that would be a phony. I outlined my off-season priorities from day one, and I felt it was important from an on-the-field and off-the-field standpoint to bring back Edwin Diaz and Pete Alonso and continue to build out the team with those two guys at their respective positions being a big part of it. Because quite honestly, you just don't find players like them that grow on trees. We talked yesterday at length about Diaz and what Diaz means to them in the ninth inning and the fabric of the team and the gauntlet that he was through in New York. And with Pete, the home runs, it's going to be a long time. In Mets history, you've only seen a few players with the prodigious power that Pete has. Mike Piazza, Daryl Strawberry, Yoenis Cespedes. And that's about it. I'm talking about real, legit, particularly right-handed power. And when you look at the, you know, the all-time OPS, RBIs, home runs, all the kind of categories, the power categories that even in the modern game where analytics looks at all different types of ways a hitter can contribute, Pete is exactly the kind of power presence in the middle of the order that you just don't replace. And you could talk about component-driven run production. It just doesn't happen, especially in a lineup that's extremely left-handed and their top hitter's left-handed. And right now, their top hitter looks pretty naked in that lineup. So there's no way for me to sit here and say this is going to be okay. I'm also not going to do the other side, which you've heard plenty of, which is the screaming, the yelling, the gnashing of teeth, the jokes, the look at what the Mets are doing. They don't know what they're doing. Because if you believe a guy worth $20 billion that's trying to build a casino and a park around the stadium and an executive making $10 million a year that was highly respected, and if he got fired today, would have a job in about 37 seconds. Just like the coaches that you thought were such jerks, like Jeremy Hefner, had a job in about 37 seconds. I'm not going to do that either. What I'm going to do is outline a little bit to you why this happened and maybe why we just need to sit back and think about our feelings on this, because maybe we've been wrong all the time. That's it. I just want you to think about for a minute the perspective. Now, before I do that, Pete Alonso meant a lot to this organization. And personally for me, he leaves here, and I've had some of my best Mets memories of Pete. First, I always had a soft spot because of his work with sheltered pets and his work with those animals and donating money. And I think he and his wife have done great work, and that's something that's near and dear to my heart. So that's personal for me. I admired how, not necessarily out of nowhere, but when he came to spring training in 2019 and everybody wanted him to be sent down, and, you know, the analytics crowd sent him down like Chris Bryant was sent down by the Cubs, gained the extra year control. And I thought Brody Van Wagenen and Mickey Callaway at the time did the right thing. The guy went to spring training. He performed in spring training. He even performed, I think he was in the Arizona Fall League that offseason and was hitting in the Arizona Fall League after he did not get the call up in 2018. And he did everything to win that job in spring training. He essentially ended any hope that Dominic Smith had of ever being the everyday first baseman. Grabbed that job, ran with it, put up historic numbers, brought an energy to the team. He, along with Jeff McNeil, Jacob deGrom, Seth Lugo, and a few other players, tried to drag that club to the postseason. Edwin Diaz, as we outlined yesterday, was the reason why they didn't make the postseason, ironically enough. The energy he brought, the excitement with the home run derbies. I think Pete's going to learn that Pete Alonso in a Mets uniform, a guy that enjoyed the New York spotlight, enjoyed the clutch, enjoyed the big moment, enjoyed the camera. More of an emotional leader, not an intelligent leader or a cerebral leader, just a real energy guy. And you need leaders like that. There's different type of leaders. You know, that's not the perfect leader, but that's a good guy to have in the clubhouse. I think Pete's going to learn that in Baltimore, maybe he'll find his niche with that club, a younger club looking for their way, in a different type of city, blue-collar city, a little bit closer to Tampa, mid-Atlantic city. But I think Pete Alonso, the Oriole, is going to be a lot different than Pete Alonso, the Met. I think he's going to learn that. Maybe he doesn't know that today, and certainly when you get paid and you cash that check every month, it's not going to matter a hell of a lot. Just like the Mets are going to learn that 40 home runs, 125 RBIs, and the energy and the fan reaction that he brought, the connection that he brought, that's not going to grow on trees. You know, Contreras is not going to bring that. Paul Goldschmidt at the end of his career is not going to bring that. A platoon of Jeff McNeil and another, righty compliment's not going to bring that. And who knows what Ryan Clifford will be. Just because he's hitting home runs in Binghamton doesn't mean he'll ever hit a home run in the big leagues. So we don't know what he's going to do. So, You know, I'm not here to tell you either of these things and have a strong opinion. I'm not here to defend the front office. What I do know is that what has happened over the last 48 hours is something that we as a fan base, and particularly me, I'll raise my hand and say I'm guilty, and I've been doing this show since 2007, have been afraid to embrace or advocate for the most part. And I could go all the way back to my early days on radio, right after the collapse of 07 and 08, and as Omar Minaya was getting fired and David Wright and Jose Reyes were aging out of their early contracts and had an opportunity, the Mets, to rebuild when they were in baseball purgatory post-Madoff. And they did not want to trade Reyes, and they let him walk. In a lot of ways, the Reyes walking. And everybody hates Reyes now because of off-the-field stuff and how he aged out. But Jose Reyes was every bit as popular as Pete Alonso. Different player, and every bit the fabric of that Mets team that Pete Alonso may be for this Mets team. So when he walked and went to Miami, a team that never spent, and Sandy Alderson, similarly to David Stearns, didn't feel he was worth the contract. And in the end, Sandy Alderson was correct, because Jose Reyes probably only had a couple of years left, and when his legs were starting to go, where he was Jose Reyes, the elite Jose Reyes that you saw in 06 and 07 and 08 and what have you. The Mets didn't rebuild. They gave David Wright the contract extension, and who knew that his back was going to go the way it went? But could you imagine what Sandy Alderson could have done, especially being in baseball purgatory, if he had traded those two in prime assets? He could have gotten a haul for those guys, and it could have changed the trajectory of the Mets, and who knows where they would have been under Alderson, especially with the payroll constraints. It was too hard. It was not something that would have been popular with the fans. It was not something that the fans could stomach. The media would criticize the organization. The ownership wasn't going to have it. And then you had the 2015 unlikely run with Cespedes and Granderson and the young pitchers. And unfortunately, because again, the Wilpons just weren't capitalized, they weren't able to keep that thing together. They weren't able to add to it. And then pitching, as it always does, disappointed with injury. And when the pitching came back, and I was the first one to say, you can't let historic pitching like this go. You can't trade Syndergaard and DeGrom and let it go. You got to keep this thing together. It's special. And it is. I mean, you're seeing now about how hard it is to build a staff, how special that situation was. But think about what could have been, as you knew, again, a different situation than today, but a situation where the Mets were not going to be able to subsidize a full roster with that pitching. And instead of maybe seeing what they could get for Wheeler and Syndergaard, even going into the deadline in 2019 when that team was making a run, they were under 500, and you probably deep down knew that nothing was going to come out of, even though you said, oh, maybe they get into the postseason, they could win in a tournament situation, you knew it would have been a flash in the pan type of situation. And again, they wrote it out, and you know, nothing came of it. And then Steve Cohen takes over as the owner. And most owners come in, clear the slate, say we're going to rebuild. But no, Steve Cohen did, because he knew this is what he had to do. Because in a town with the Yankees and all these other options, and a team and a fan base that felt so cursed over the last 15 seasons, especially since the Madoff situation, he wasn't going to put them through a lengthy rebuild and a promise of tomorrow. He was going to try to rebuild the team infrastructure, rebuild the farm system, rebuild every component of that front office while spending money and trying to win it all like the 1997 Miami Marlins. And you know what? He put together a team that won 101 games, and the only reason they didn't win the division that year is because the Atlanta Braves decided to be the 98 Yankees from Memorial Day onward. And that following offseason, he doubled down. And for a hot minute, they thought they had Carlos Correa. And at that point, it was unfathomable how the Mets, under this owner, had become everything that the Yankees were. But deep down, especially after DeGrom left via free agency, and within a couple of days, they signed an aging Justin Verlander, again, to provide us with the methadone of, hey, let's just continue to spend money to replace what we just lost. Deep down, you knew at some point this was not sustainable. But I continue to advocate for it because I believed, hey, money can solve problems. This guy has it. He doesn't care about spending it. Why go through the pain or the risk? Not even the pain, the risk of taking a step back to go forward. And even though the step back in a Cohen world might not be a true step back. And then, look, it wasn't that long ago. It seems like 1,000 years ago. But it was Memorial Day-ish, 2024, and I had told you it wasn't going to work. Trade Nimmo. I talked about trading Lindor, trading Alonso, trading Diaz. Like, I was ready to back up the truck. I could go and look for the archive. I remember the show. I think it was a week before Memorial Day. It was probably right after the whole Dodgers fiasco. And even going into the London series, I remember having conversations with a Mets fan offline, I said, who was annoyed with J.D. Davis. J.D. Martinez, who was struggling. I said, don't worry, he's going to be gone in a month anyway. They're going to tear this thing apart. And then that crazy home plate situation with Luis Torrens happened, and the Mets get out of London with a couple of victories, and they went on a roll. And then OMG and Grimace and Pete's home run and Lindor's home run, and Diaz all of a sudden is Mariano Rivera. And they take on the Dodgers, and at that point, you're like, why not? Why stop at the Dodgers? They could take this thing all the way. And you forgot about the fact that just 90 to 120 days earlier, everybody was looking to just be done with most of these guys because they felt that it had all run its course. And at that point, you couldn't rip the damn thing apart. Add to it. Bring in Soto. Why not? Generation Ted Williams. Why wouldn't you bring in Ted Williams? And you jerked around with Pete, but I always felt Pete was going to come back. And then last year happened, and I'm trying to find out where I read this, and I apologize as I look for it here on X. But, you know, sometimes I even get guilty of, even though I try not to be a fan, and I try to be balanced, and I try to play GM, and I try to not show my orange and blue blood, so to speak. But it was Mike Petriello of MLB.com, and he wrote this earlier. And he says, one thing I keep reading about the 2025 Mets is that they massively underperformed expectations. But that feels so entirely about the unsustainable hot rotation start that was never going to last. A roster built for 88 wins that actually wins 83, that happens all the time. And he's right. And Stearns finally looked at this thing, and I'm not saying he lied to us, because he doesn't lie, he tells you. And I think he said, look, I know what the value of Diaz is to me, and I think they're a little bit more stunned by Diaz than Alonso. I know Alonso's value. Deep down, he knew he could lose them. I think he was more prepared to lose Pete than Diaz. And if they want it, play under the contract value that I see fit, then fine. We'll continue to go forward and build around them. But I think deep down he knew that wasn't going to happen. And once Diaz left, and once he heard, like everybody else, that Baltimore had offered Schwarber 5 years and $150 million, I said it yesterday. I knew that that's where the market for Pete was going. Look, I knew in August that's where the market for Pete was going. So when I started here, they were going to stay in firm on 3 years. I'm like, what's wrong with these guys? I knew he was going to get $30 million AAV from somebody. Now, all it took, like I said, was one team, and it was Baltimore. It wasn't Boston. It wasn't Chicago. It wasn't the Yankees. I mean, maybe it would have been the Phillies if Schwarber went to Baltimore. Who knows? That would have been interesting. And it would have been interesting if Schwarber had signed with Baltimore if all these teams were in the same bandwidth of the Mets, you know, 3 years or whatever. Would it have changed Pete's feelings on New York? But I think ultimately Pete, and he showed a lot of his, I guess, hey, I want to be loved by the Mets at the end of the season by saying, I hope they appreciated me. I'm opting out. He made it clear. And I think at that point, it's been pretty clear that this is going to be Stearns' team. Who knows if even Cohen's comfortable with this, but Cohen is a guy that hired a president of baseball operation, promised to let the baseball people run the baseball team. He's got a pretty big job at .72. He's not going to be able to sit in the GM chair every day and do his day trading and moonlight making sure that the Mets have a farm system and that the Mets have a second baseman and that the Mets could sign the best free agents. That's what he's hiring his baseball department for. He's not George Steinbrenner. He may make headlines with spending like George Steinbrenner, but he's not George Steinbrenner. So when you start to look at this thing, maybe this is something that we need as a fan base. We need as commentators that cover the Mets, because this is hard. This stinks. Those are our guys. Pete was a homegrown player. Diaz won us over. They have unique talents that are not necessarily replicatable in a single individual player. Collectively, you're going to be able to make up what they bring. Because I still don't believe the Mets are just going to rebuild. I don't believe that. And remember, there's still some big names out there. Alex Bregman's out there. Kyle Tucker's out there. Cody Bellinger's out there. There could be trades that are going to happen. And I don't know. You're already seeing, you know, for example, you're hearing about Paul Goldschmidt. You're hearing about Wilson Contreras, potentially. Yandy Diaz is another name I've heard. I mean, there's some names, and we've brought up possible names over the course of the last few weeks since the season ended. We've done some dabbling into non-Diaz options, whether it be on the show or with premium content. But I'll tell you what, anytime I did a non-Diaz, non-Pete conversation, my heart wasn't into it because I kept looking at him like, oh, this makes me uncomfortable. But it doesn't make the most important person uncomfortable, because he has a vision, and that's David Stearns. Because David Stearns continuously is looked up. He sees he has a top five farm system. He has two top 10 players in the game in Lindor and Soto. I don't think that Lindor is going to get traded. I know that, and I even tweeted about that. Why not go all the way and rip the thing apart? I don't think that's where they're going to go. But at this point, you've kind of ripped the Band-Aid off. The fans are so angry and numb. At this point, Stearns can't piss this fan base off any more than he has. This is your chance to do everything that you're afraid that's going to piss them off. Do it now, because it's not going to make it any worse. But I don't think they're not going to break up two top 10 players in the game. You've got young pitching. You still have a decent closer, albeit one that you've put a tremendous amount of pressure on. You've got money to spend on the right player, whether that's some of the guys I just mentioned or somebody that we're not even talking about. And don't discount the fact that you're staring down labor dispute within a year that could delay the season and maybe change the dynamic of how teams are able to spend money and be built. So maybe he's thinking about that because he doesn't want to be pigeonholed in a new world. Maybe he knows something that's being bandied about. And let's also, and again, this is something that we don't want to hear, that you're looking at the same Los Angeles, the city of Los Angeles, that back in the 80s in the NBA, nobody wanted to, everybody knew they couldn't beat them. So they'd go over to the sidelines and ask Pat Riley to bring them over. And you have the Dodgers, who are a modern-day Chicago Bulls, a modern-day Yankees dynasty, modern-day Lakers dynasty. And Stearns is saying, hey, it's not going to last forever, but maybe I need to take the next couple of years to put myself in a position to be in a great position to beat these guys when the opportunity opens themselves up, because no dynasty lasts forever. I don't care what age Otani is and how many Japanese players they import. Freddie Freeman's not Benjamin Button. Neither is Mookie Betts. They still have some pitch players in their farm system, but in a couple of years, as their team ages, they're going to be in the same position as the Mets, where they have some young players coming up. And who knows? Prospects are suspects until they're not. And, you know, maybe he's betting on that. Maybe he's saying, you know, why am I going out and giving A money to maybe B minus players, or A plus money to B or B plus players, where in 2 years or 3 years, I'm going to be regretting it. Now, I don't necessarily agree, because I read what Keith Law wrote about Alonso, and he's not the only one, but he essentially said that there's some concerns about Alonso's bat slowing down. I agree with that. There's concerns about his second half. I mean, he did have some struggles. I think it was July he had some struggles. But if you look, I mean, Pete had, with the 40 doubles, but the 120 RBIs, down the stretch in when the Mets needed it the most in August and September. He had OPS over 920. He hit 300 or nearly 300 in those months. 16 home runs, 45 RBIs. Didn't walk a hell of a lot and still struck out quite a bit. Maybe that's the part that they feel is unsustainable. He had a 349 BABIP in September. That's somewhat of an anomaly. And in a lot of his big months, he had a very high batting average on balls in play. Maybe they feel that's going to come back down to earth. And you're paying a guy $31 million a year for what, especially in 24 months, could be more of a what you see out of Brandon Nimmo, $22 to $24 million a year performance. Or worse yet, a fall off the cliff like Richie Sexson. I've talked about this the last few years many, many times. I'm not going to get back into it. You guys know the deal. Right-handed batters, as they hit the age of 32, 33, start to decline. I still think the Orioles are going to get a really good player for at least 2 to 3 years. And I think years 4 and 5 might not be as bad as they think. And even from the standpoint of defense, I don't think his first base defense, even though he struggled on bunts and he would do some stupid stuff, the scoops, let me tell you, if you don't get someone who knows how to pick it, you're going to see a lot more errors out of that infield, unless something's changed. I know they got Kai Correa, well-respected coach, infield defensive coach. Maybe he's working on something. Who knows? But, you know, ultimately, for years, I heard the fan base pine for the kind of infrastructure that the Rays had. And to have a smart, committed, disciplined front office like the Dodgers and maybe the Yankees, whatever team was the analytical flavor of the month. And now they have it, but they're like, hey, I want it, but I only want it for certain parts of my team. Lay off my homegrown players, lay off my favorites. It doesn't work that way. I think Stearns has wanted to do what we've seen the last couple of days from the jump. If you remember that first off season, he didn't spend a lot of money. And I even said, and I'll give him credit here, he's got cojones. He doesn't care what the media says. He doesn't care what the fans say. As a matter of fact, I think the owner of the team that signs his checks is probably calling him up and saying, you sure about this? I wouldn't be surprised. Are you sure about this? Because he's a fan. He loved Pete. He's got a relationship with Diaz. This is probably hard for him and his family too. You know, they seem to be the type of owners that get really invested in their employees. And when you see an employee leave, just like any other business, it's emotional. It's like someone in your family leaving, and they're not dead. They're still alive as a person, but they're dead in the form of the relationship and the companionship and the interactions that you'll get on a daily basis. So, you know, we could sit here and complain and rehash why this is a bad move. I wanted Diaz and Pete to be part of the next gen Mets as they tried to build this out. I know most of you wanted him to be. I mean, I've got the letters here in front of me, emails, and, you know, Sal, his Mets flag is at half staff. He feels like the Mets community took a 1988 Mike Tyson uppercut to the head. And anybody who is a boxing fan and was young, old enough to remember Mike Tyson, that's the best of the best when it came to boxing. Anyone who played Mike Tyson's Punch-Out back in the day, old Nintendo game, if you ever took an uppercut from the video game version of Mike Tyson, you know. And they're confused. How can you let him go for what, in the world of big money teams, 5 years, $155 million, which is his value, which is what we talked about. How can you let him go? David, worst day in Mets history since Tom Seaver, and he was there for the Tom Seaver Midnight Massacre. And that says a lot because I know many people that were Mets fans and stopped being Mets fans when Tom Seaver was traded. That's a true story. I mean, so many, what do you call them, baby boomers generation have used to tell me, and I don't think you get as much of that now, but going back 20 years, oh, I was a Mets fan until they traded Tom Seaver. I couldn't take that. You know, it's true. And I think it hurts them to see him go to the Dodgers. And then you have our friend Sam talking about Stearns misreading the market. But then you have Ben applauding Stearns and basically saying what I said, that hey, when you really want to talk about it on the margins, Stern's got cojones here. He's got balls to do what he's going to do because he's going to get crucified. And if you really take away, the Mets were a Lindor home run away from not even making the playoffs in 2024. 2024 is remembered fondly because it was a fun summer. But the last week of that season, it got dicey. And I think Stearns has the opportunity now to build this team in his own identity. And that doesn't mean he's not going to spend money. It means he's going to try to build it with the right spending of money. And I'm not going to judge this offseason on December 10th. Don't look great. And every time a free agent comes off the board, you get more and more stressed. This is not the way a year after Soto signed you want to be having these kind of conversations. But talk to me on Valentine's Day what I think of the Mets. And when Stearns does speak to the media, and he will speak again, there's no reason for him to go out there and defend himself. He's doing his job. The more that we see these prospects that we keep hearing about, this top five farm system, let's see how they develop. A lot of them are ETA 2027. The next year will be fascinating to see the next level. I mean, there are people that I've talked to that feel like, hey, look at the Mets prospects 10, 11, 12, 13. In some organizations, they'd be top five. I mean, there are some people who are really bullish on the Mets young players. I mean, think about it. Christian Scott, a really talented pitcher that was somewhat of a savior when the Mets were struggling early in 2024, is somewhat of a forgotten man on the prospect situation. And I've been telling you all along, I had this feeling that they're going to want to give the young players a chance to be part of the core, be compliments to Lindor and Soto. They want to get their young pitching some run. They want to see what this farm system has. Spend some money on the right players. So I think that this was something that we should have been prepared for. I think we were in denial. And for the first time in a long time, maybe since Frank Cashin was around, the Mets are sticking to their guns and building the team the way they want. They're not caving into fan pressure. They're not caving into media pressure. Not yet, anyway. And if he's wrong, and this thing gets worse and worse, then guess what? He's going to be gone, Stearns, in 24 months. I worry a little bit about Citi Field kind of reverting back to what I hated and what got me in trouble with the fans in April of 24. I think the work of OMG Grimace and removing the yoke from around their neck, I think the organization doesn't have it because I don't think they believe in that stuff because they believe in themselves, unlike prior regimes, I think, that were feeling the weight of past failure. But I think the yoke is around the fans' neck. And I think the PTSD of the fans is something that is just not going to go away until this team wins a championship. I hate to say it. I think there's going to be fans who, until that day that they get the final out and they're the last team standing, they're never going to lose that paranoia or that dark cloud or that feeling of nothing ever goes right. And can you blame them? Some of them have never seen a World Series. Some of them, there's a big chunk of the fan base that doesn't know. They know 86 from the stories and the clips that are out there, but they didn't live it. It's not like some of the old-time Mets fans that saw 69, they saw 86. I mean, they've had some good moments. Maybe they remember 06, maybe they remember 15. But they remember, for the most part, even if they go back to 2000, the season ending in some kind of horrible, disappointing way that just punched you in the gut. And guess what? They got punched in the gut in a similar fashion in the last 48 hours. Two likable, popular, one homegrown Met, gone, never to be potentially heard from again in a Mets uniform. And all they could say is the guy responsible is David Stearns. But David Stearns is not responsible for making you happy or keeping your favorite player in a Mets uniform if he feels that's not part of the long-term, viable, sustainable winning formula. And this is his team now. This is his way. He's doing it his way. You want to cue up Frank Sinatra? Go ahead, cue him up. He doesn't care what Mike Silva says, Joe Benigno says, WFAN says, Frank the Tank says, Mike Vaccaro says, Joel Sherman says, members of the media say, Baseball Night in New York, Andy Martino, do I need to go on? He doesn't care. You want to talk about it, speculate it, ask him questions, he'll answer you, be polite, he'll smile. I know everybody hates to smile. He's going to do it his way because he believes he has the answers and he believes he has the right team. And he knows at the end of the day, it's not the fans and the media that can get him fired. It's the wins and the losses. And if he's going to get fired or he's going to fail, he's going to do it his way. And I got to admire that because I got to tell you, I wouldn't have the guts to do what he did the last 40 hours. I would have pushed to give Diaz the fifth year. I would have given Pete the 5 years and $150 million before the Orioles did. I would have been scared to hear what the fans and media had to say if I let those guys walk. And I would have questioned myself about my plan if that was part of my plan. That's why I'm sitting here talking to you. I'm not a GM. I'm emotionally attached. And I think that that is something ultimately, and you saw it in Milwaukee with Josh Hader when they got let him go and it kind of hurt the clubhouse. Stearns has done this before. And if it doesn't work out, he's going to have to start to rethink the emotional attachment that these certain type of players have with the organization and fans and how he negotiates with them and how he factors that into his, whatever his methodology is of building a team. Because I got a lot of Mets fans from different generations pissed off the last 24 hours. I've gotten plenty of calls. I have a Met fan that I know today that looked like he was ready to cry. And that's not an exaggeration. A very much an adult man that was looked like he got smacked in the face because I broke the news to him that Alonso went to Baltimore. It tells you the emotion on this. Stearns is playing with some fire here. And I worry that the fans are going to punish the team and wait for them to slip on a banana peel. And I can promise you in sports, and Mets fans are very good at this, that if you put enough banana peels out there, the team's going to slip. I think the media is going to be all over them. Now, they signed Kyle Tucker and Alex Bregman in the next 30 days and bring in a couple of pitchers. They'll probably forget about all this. But the first time Devin Williams blows a game and Edwin Diaz is mowing him down out in La La Land, and if Pete Alonso's got 12 home runs on April 30th and off to a hot start in Camden Yards, well, I don't know who's playing first base for the Mets, but if it's Paul Goldschmidt and he's hitting a .192, you all know what we're going to be talking about every day, twice on Sunday. So that's what I got for you. Now, I don't know if there's breaking news. I haven't been checking the Twitter feed. I'm going to be putting this one out. And, you know, what's next? I will be back on Sunday. The plan is, unless there's breaking news, I'm not going to be coming to you on the air until Sunday. We'll see what that all looks like. Continue to go to TalkingMetsPodcast.com. Maybe join us in the chat. That's free. You don't have to pay for that. You want to... There'll be some premium content. I'll be putting that out, trying to think about some different things to talk about. Obviously, we're going to be doing more non-Diaz, non-Alonso analysis. And as always, you can get updates on the show and what have you. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Of course, like I say, you can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify. Pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. And if you want to interact with me, you want to talk more about Pete Alonso, Diaz, or anything else, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your night. Be back with more Talking Mets podcast content soon. Till then, take care, everybody. For the party.